how much do you know about the people who control your money? I'm talking about Wall Street giants like Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase, central banks like the Federal Reserve, the people who actually make the money.
What the modern central bankers do is exactly what the alchemists were trying to do hundreds of years ago, which is create money out of thin air and influence the economy and the world that way.
Neil Irwin is a Washington Post columnist. He calls these big central bankers the alchemists.
Well, hundreds of years ago, there were these people who thought they could, through potions and magic and early chemistry, find a way to turn ordinary materials into gold or silver. You know, it's been said that Sir Isaac Newton was not the first modern scientist, but rather the last of the alchemists. But what happened around that same time in the 1600s is mankind was figuring out that you don't actually need some potions or magic to create gold or create money where there was none. All you need is a central bank, somebody in charge of it. You need a printing press to create money, and you need the power of the state imbued in that institution. And that allows you to create money out of thin air.
This has been true, then, for a very long time. But for most of us, I think it hasn't been true in an upfront sense until the crisis of 2008 really hit us between the eyes. I would guess that there were people then who'd never heard of Ben Bernanke or Mervyn King of the Bank of England or Jean-Claude Trichet of the European Central Bank. Now, well, maybe people still don't know their names, but they know that there are guys up there who are incredibly powerful.
I think that's true. You know, when things are going well, you take money for granted and you go to the movies and you pay $20 and you get a couple of tickets and everything works normally. What this crisis exposed is how money is really an idea more than a thing. And it can be scary the more you know and the more you think about it. And so what we found during those darkest days of the financial crisis in 2008 was that money was not available. The banks were freezing up lending. The flow of finance, the flow of the global financial system essentially shut down. And what happened is the central banks, these guys, Ben Bernanke and Jean-Claude Trichet and Mervyn King at the Bank of England, they essentially tried to counteract that process. So they fired up the presses. They created money on a vast scale, trillions of dollars and euros and pounds, and flooded the financial system with money to try and counteract this freeze-up in credit that was happening at the same time.
And we trust these people to take care of us. But these are people who are not even elected officials, are they? Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, society has entrusted these central bankers with a vast amount of power, and it certainly raises concerns from a democratic perspective. You know, why is it that Ben Bernanke, who's a former Princeton professor who's never been elected to anything beyond the Princeton, New Jersey school board, why is that a guy who is able to essentially deploy trillions of dollars that are essentially taxpayer resources, according to how he and his committee see fit? It's a choice that societies have made because the alternatives seem worse. And what we saw again and again through this last several years is that the global central bankers were able to act with a speed and on a scale that the politicians weren't. Presidents and parliaments dithered and tried to move too slowly and too timidly at a time when Ben Bernanke and the other central bankers were willing to, whether it was the middle of the night or whenever it might be, find ways to push these trillions of dollars into the financial system. There are certainly lots of mistakes they made and lots of doubts we can have about individual decisions they made. But in the aggregate, this was something that really kept the world economy from some much worse outcomes.
But it's also interesting, isn't it, that these three men don't actually share the same philosophy. Bernanke is a man who has learned a great deal based on his study of the Depression. But King of the Bank of England would have a completely different attitude under most circumstances, wouldn't he?
Yes, they come from very different traditions, different philosophical approaches, different experiences. Jean-Claude Trichet was a French civil servant. He worked at the French Treasury and became the most powerful central banker in Europe. Mervyn King and Ben Bernanke, they were both academic economists. They actually shared an office at MIT in the early 1980s, but had different impulses and instincts on what to do when things turn bad. So I start the book with this scene of August 9th, 2007. It was really the first day of what became a global financial crisis. And Jean-Claude Trichet is on vacation in France. Ben Bernanke has a usual workday in Washington. Mervyn King is off at a cricket match in London for the day. And that's the first time one of the central banks did an intervention. The ECB pumped 95 billion euros into the European banking system. And that day they had all very different philosophies on what was going on, what the threat was, and what to do about it. Now, what we saw is as time progressed, as the threat became graver, as we entered that post-Lehman Brothers time of the fall of 2008 that we all remember some of those dark days, they did find common purpose.
The way you talk about them, the way you've profiled them, the way you describe the work they do, these men seem kind of like Illuminati. What do you think, after this study, of the way they approach their problems, of their ethics?
you know, there are aspects that are a little troubling if you believe in democracy and transparency and all these things. You know, these are the global central bankers. They meet six times a year in Basel, Switzerland, in this cylindrical building next to the train station where they – that's technically not part of any country. It's like the United Nations. If you go to the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, you are not on Swiss soil. You are on international soil. And they have these long sessions of debating economics. They have a private dinner of just the leading nation central bankers on the 18th floor. They have delicious food and great wine, Bordeaux, Burgundy, good wine. What happens around that table is a sense of common purpose builds, and they feel a loyalty to each other, to the common purpose of trying to shape a better world economy. That said, it does raise lots of concerns if you don't like the idea of a bunch of guys getting together and drinking good wine and charting out the future of all of us. It raises lots of concerns. At the same time, in many ways over the last few years, that process has looked better in its outcomes than what we've gotten out of democratically elected officials. Presidents and parliaments have often been slow up on the uptake at a time the central banks have been more assertive and tried to contain this economic damage.
Of course, the way we look at politics in the United States these days, it almost seems like a benevolent dictator would be a good idea. I'm not proposing that, by the way. Are these men aware of the power they wield?
I think very much so. There is definitely a sense that it is their obligation to try and learn from history, to try and understand where their predecessors have gone wrong. You know, if you look at history, when central bankers fail, societies fail. It was the failures of the German central bank in Weimar Germany that created hyperinflation that led to the initial rise of the Nazis. Then the Great Depression, of course, in the 1930s, that was ultimately a failure of the global central bankers to act with common purpose, to flood the financial system with money, to respond to the actual economic conditions they were facing. The result was an economic depression and, again, the rise of the Nazis in World War II. The stakes here are massive. If they get it right, the world is in a better place. We can avoid a lot of bad things. People can have a prosperous tomorrow and have better outcomes. If they fail, the outcomes can be just horrible.
One of the things people want to know about them, I think, is whether there is any politics involved. We talk about them as though they are independent of politics, and in many ways they are, because they run the economy that fires up the politics. But on the other hand, you've done a lot of study of this, and you've met a lot of these people. You've seen the ramifications. Are there politics? Are they servants at some times of political power?
They try not to be, but they are inevitably chosen by politicians. They serve at the will of democratically elected legislatures. You know, there's a lot of efforts to insulate them from politics by giving them long terms and non-renewable terms, that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, they do operate in a political system. We've seen some very uncomfortable entanglements between political authorities and the central bankers. In Europe, you have the ECB is actually part of this troika of lenders that negotiates with the Greek government and the Portuguese government and the Irish government on what the bailout's going to consist of and what they have to do to get that bailout. So now you have this weird situation where the central bank is essentially dictating to democratically elected legislatures what to do with their taxes and their pension system and so on.
So what do we do to make them better? I mean, is there a way to, I don't know, curtail the privileges, the power of these men and their institutions?
You know, I think the most important thing is accountability. And we already have that in some forms. Ben Bernanke and the others go before their legislatures, their parliaments, and have to answer questions and explain where they're failing, where they're succeeding, and answer essentially through legislators to the public. They all do press conferences now and take questions from reporters. A number of them do speeches where they take questions from the public. I think that is an important element of accountability. They need to have people asking them every day, what did you do? Why did you do it? And second-guessing, are you making the right decision for the masses, not just for the bankers, not just for the financial elite?
Washington Post columnist Neil Irwin. His book is called The Alchemists, Three Central Bankers and A World on Fire.